Shabbat Shalom. 48 hours before sitting down for the first Seder with my family, I was here in this sanctuary with roughly 25 sixth and seventh grade students. We were sorting boxes of Band-Aids, packages of underwear, tins of baby formula, bottles of aspirin, and more. Together, we arranged the items by type and then carefully packed them into large blue duffel bags, creating specific lists for each bag. Some students became so invested in preparing these supplies that when it was time for dismissal, they called their parents and asked to stay longer. So much longer that I also had to contact their Hebrew teachers to notify them that their students were going to be late for their lesson that evening. These young members of our community understood the impact that these items could make and wanted to do as much as they could to make a difference in the lives of others. The stacks of duffels brimming with supplies and the thousands of dollars our congregation collected and donated to help those in fleeing a war-torn Ukraine is astounding. We should be proud to be part of a community that heeds a call to action and responds to those in need. We remembered our obligation to care for the poor, the orphaned, the widowed. We did not stand idly by. We upheld our position as God's partners in repairing the world. And I hope that you followed the experiences of Rabbi Hirsch and our members. Maybe you read about how they bought groceries for Ukrainians who crossed the border overwhelmed and exhausted, or looked at pictures of travelers with 86 duffel bags brimming with supplies that within an hour were distributed to those who desperately needed them. Or maybe you watched Rabbi Hirsch speak with Shira, who left her kibbutz to help the women and children coming across the border while temporarily residing in a refugee center that was once a shopping mall. You might have listened to the conversation Rabbi Hirsch had with Avi Ofir from the Jewish Agency for Israel, who took over a hotel with his colleagues to process Ukrainian olim to Israel. I look forward to listening to more stories from our members and from Rabbi Hirsch when he shares his reflections at this bima. Those weary, now wide-eyed travelers have returned, having left behind money, supplies, and a token of humanity. We have done our job. Fulfilled our obligation. We gave, we engaged, we learned. We did what could have been done.
So should we go back to reading about daily destruction and cataclysmic casualties that are happening in a war on the other side of the world while sipping our Starbucks? Do we simply hold on to the memories?
As Passover ended, those same religious school students returned to this sanctuary. Only a few days before, they were surrounded by Band-Aid boxes. And now, the room was filled with memories. Stories of horrific happenings that in the same moment feel impossible and all too probable. For the fourth year in a row, we partnered with 3GNY. An educational nonprofit founded by grandchildren of Holocaust survivors. Members of this amazing organization share their grandparents' stories, ensuring that their memories and legacies survive. Each of the speakers shared poignant and powerful stories of struggle, survival, shock, and sadness with our sixth and seventh grade students, their parents, and our larger teen community. These words from the grandchildren of Holocaust survivors told of another time when atrocities were easily found on the other side of the world. These tales of terror, tears, and bittersweet triumph are essential
for all of us to hear, especially during the week of Yom HaShoah. The Holocaust is more than our past. It is part of our Jewish DNA with scars that will never leave our collective memory, and a constant, pulsating reminder of how truly dangerous anti-Semitism can be. It would be much easier, even with the current climate of anti-Semitism trickling through our daily lives and anti-Zionism bleeding through so many headlines, to push off the memory of the Holocaust, relegating it to just another trouble spot in our history. We could bury our heads in the sand and delete the ADL's new report showing the rise of anti-Semitic attacks. We could go on about our regularly scheduled religious school programming without bringing in speakers who show pictures of people with number tattoos and videos of mass graves in fields. We could read a book about World War II and sadly sigh over all of the moments that our people have been bullied, beaten, and buried. We could simply remember the past and move on. Just have a moment of memory without engaging or delving into the lingering consequences or effects. It would, of course, be easier. However, we Jews never do anything with ease. We strive to be better, to do more, always pushing toward an ideal. Zachor, the Jewish concept of memory, asks us to do more than simply think about the past. When we connect with those who survived the Holocaust and those who did not, Zachor is not about merely remembering. It is also about actively stopping ourselves from forgetting. Even as we say the words, never forget, we also mean never again. The challenge of Zachor is not merely to hold on to the idea in our head, but as one brilliant fifth grader put it to me this week, move that memory into our hearts and our hands so that we can do something about it. Memory might be passive, but remembering is not the totality of our responsibility. Rashi tells us that Zachor, to remember, was uttered in the same breath as Shamor, to protect or guard. Tonight, for Shabbat, we lit two candles, one to Zachor, to remember Shabbat, and the other to Shamor, to protect and guard Shabbat. Separating Shabbat from the rest of the week takes the work of our heads and our hands. We remember and focus on the sanctity of this day each week, thinking about how God rested. And at the same time, we work to protect the holiness of Shabbat by taking time to pray with our community and stepping away from our own works of creation. Zachor is not supposed to live on its own. It has a partner. Memory should lead us to action, action that is grounded in the memories we hold dear. It's true that what our synagogue has done over the past month for Ukrainians is beautiful. But if we stop here, then it is not truly worthy of praise and will surely not fulfill the obligation. How will we continue to not only remember the people of Ukraine, but to guard and to protect them in 3 months, 6 months, even a year, when, God willing, this war has ceased, but the people of Ukraine are still scarred and scattered? Will we send more money and more supplies? Will we have the drive and energy to send more members of our community to offer humanitarian support and human connection? Will we live up to the challenge of Zachor and Shamor? Or will we have moved on? How many of us still think about the refugees from Syria that our community members visited in Greece? How long did it take before trips to New Orleans stopped including Katrina relief work or education about how systemic racism destroyed the most vulnerable communities? What happened to our outrage for families that were separated and caged like animals when they crossed the border into this country? And what of the regular, everyday causes and organizations that need our sponsorship and volunteering to survive? Do we regularly donate to soup kitchens, shelters, or even this synagogue? Have these causes been pushed aside for the current crisis? It is easy to respond in the heat of the moment when every headline and every news story shows horrible images, tells tragic tales, and rocks us to the core. Nevertheless, when coverage wanes, as it inevitably does, and moves on to the next hot topic, we must continue to pay attention, to remember and act, even as others forget. I know it feels impossible to keep up with every tragedy and every important cause, to stay afloat in the waves of world news, to help as much as we can for everyone that needs it. That is our burden, our mission as Jews who have woven the words "never forget" into the fabric of our being. Our hearts, our efforts, and yes, even our wallets are challenged to grow with each person, each crisis, each organization that needs us. Like we do when we add people into our family, we must find a way to expand for those that need us, to not forsake one thing for another, to never be smug enough to pat ourselves on the back and go back to our lives, forgetting about those that need us, except for the brief moment when we drop off donations and dollars. As Rabbi Karen Kadar states, this is the obligation of a religious life. We must give away our time, give away our money, and give away our kindness. Always, never stopping, and never forgetting. It is not Shamor or Zachor. It is both, in partnership, helping to heighten and highlight one another. It is not the way of the Jewish people to do one mitzvah at a time. We do them all the time. Our memory must spur us to act, and to truly act, we must be fueled by memory. This year, let us remember the 6 million by continually doing the work of helping. Ken Yehi Ratzon.